Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Thursday to all across the Delaware Valley. It's Thursday, June the 9th. But guess what? It's another W. Yes. So last night, how about another 10-0 piece?
What?
Another 10-0 piece by the Fightins. Let's make it 5 in a row. And last night, the Phillies get to Hauser, 4 home runs. Stott gets the party started. Bryson Stott, Reese, Dubel, and Harper. And there it is. Meanwhile, Freeze on the mound, 8 innings. 8 shutout innings. By Freeze, 4 hits, no walks, 6 strikeouts, 103 pitches. I would have let him finish it just for posterity purposes. But, hey, perfect, great outing by Nola and another great win. And the Phillies. Now, here's the question. Is this a... I hate the term, but the term is, because the term's graphic, but it's a Wall Street term, the dead cat bounce. Is that what this is? Or is it something more? Now, I think it's something more. I do. I mean, we talked about their lineup, and we talked about the potency of their lineup. Yeah, I mean, do they need to fix some things like center field, leadoff? Yeah, but we knew that they would hit. And they're starting to wake up this way. And look, I mean, you know, you get some decent pitching, and the next thing you know, what happens, right? What happens? Next thing you know, we got a little streak going. 5 in a row is nice. You got Burns today. Today's a big one, right? This is, now, Milwaukee's lost 5 in a row, which is key. So, you know, you got a shot. You beat Burns, you come home, and you got a great homestand, and all of a sudden, you know, you just wipe away that bad start, right? Like, that's a big deal. You know, that's a big deal. So I'm very excited, very excited over the Fightins. Judas, play the song. Give me the There's Bryson Stott. Out of here.
There it is.
Fly ball to deep.
I love that.
Renfro's going back toward the wall. It is gone. Another home run for Bryson Stott. And this one gives the Phils a 2-0 lead.
Bryson Stott. Judas Chain rolls 5 in a row. And we still got a shot. Still got a shot. Marlins, Nats. Highly winnable. Good morning, Judas.
What's up, man?
I know, that's funny because I'm not going to go, oh, how about the Phillies? We talked about the Phillies for an hour this morning.
Yeah, we did.
You know, like, so we Judas and I are, we talk every morning and then we just start, and we can't help it but to do part of the show on the ride in. And part of the show was, man, freaking great, man. I love that freaking Harper.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
I love Bryce.
I know we talk about the fringe fans and maybe they haven't done enough to grab people, but I am going to say this. You're missing a good time right now, right? Like, now is a time where you might want to start turning it on because, dude, they're on fire right now, and it's not, like, these random wins, right? Put up a 10 spot last night, a 10 spot the first game with Rob Thompson, two come-from-behind wins, one a walk-off in Philadelphia. The second come-from-behind win was ridiculous against a closer who hadn't blown a series since last July. Like, they're winning fun ball games. Now, it's more fun when your team scores 10 runs and the other team scores zero, right? Because we've been on the opposite end of that, and it's a boring game and nobody likes it. But when it's your team, and that's what they're doing right now. This lineup is on fire. Harper with another moonshot yesterday. I know the game was out of reach, but
doesn't matter.
The dude's playing so well right now.
That's right.
And Bryson Stott, you mentioned the home run. He had four hits yesterday.
I know.
And so I want to bring something up because it's something that we've all been saying for years now. Not just Girardi. I go back to Gabe Kapler with this. Ruben Amaro Jr. during the broadcast yesterday after Stott hit the home run. So this is early in the game. He said something that we've all been saying. You know, this goes a long way. It goes a long way when you know you're in the lineup, when you're penciling in the lineup every single day. You're not coming to the ballpark wondering if you're going to be in it or not. You're not coming to the ballpark knowing
I never understood. Listen, I know the Giants had success with Gabe, but I never understood this whole notion of these crazy lineups and all this sort of thing. I never understood it.
Yeah, especially, like, even more so the Gabe Kapler days, because you had a lot of young, like, you weren't ready to win yet.
Yeah.
So you're still trying to figure out your young players, but, you know, Scott Kingery goes 4-for-4 one night, and then he's on the pine for the next two because the splits say so, right? Girardi was bad with it, but he obviously had his, you know, his guy Didi and his guy Johan Camargo, maybe veterans that he trusted more. That wasn't even the case with Gabe, going back to that time, for everybody that says they should have kept Gabe Kapler. But we've been saying it for years, and Amaro, even Ruben Amaro Jr. also mentioned it. Also, you're tight when you are in the lineup. If you don't know you're gonna be in the lineup the next day, you're now gonna try to do a little bit extra, right? You go, well, I went 3-for-4 the last time I started, and they put me back on the bench. Maybe I need to go 4-for-4 with four home runs, to be in the starting lineup. And with Rob Thompson, and I get it, they're kind of playing Stott out of necessity because of all the injuries, right? Maton and Segura. So there's no excuse to not play Bryson Stott, right? There's no excuses. So he's got to play. But look at it. The dude knows he's in the lineup every single day. And even though he had zero hits in game one of the series, he made a couple of nice big plays at second base. So it's awesome right now that they're just playing. And I heard Ricky this morning. He's right. Alec Bohm said it. A couple of people have said it. Rob Thompson's just a baseball guy, right? Like, he just manages baseball. Alec Bohm talked about getting on top of the baseball instead of launch angles.
I know.
Right? Like,
that's
an analytics thing.
Yeah, when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, thank you.
But that's what it is.
And look, thank God.
It's a moonshot the other day.
Yeah.
And we loved his bat when he first came up. Loved his bat.
It's like Reese. Do you remember how they screwed Reese up?
Oh, my God,
I mean, I always have a soft spot for Hoskins.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because, look, he was ridiculous when he came up.
Yeah, 17 home runs.
And he was never going to be that, right? But they screwed him up. Like, they took him and they screwed him up. They tried to messed around with his swing. They hit him over the head with the launch angle stuff.
Remember, he used gap-to-gap guy.
I know.
And then all of a sudden it was like, no, you have to pull the ball,
dude,
every single time.
Dude, he was a really good opposite field power, man.
That's where he hit his home run yesterday.
He had natural power to the opposite field. And then they just screwed up. They screwed him up, man. They did. And that's why I always feel for Hoskins. Because I don't go, oh, they traded, disappointment, this and that. Listen, I understand it, but I have a soft spot for him because I think they screwed him up. And look, they were on their way to screwing Bohm up, too. Bohm's just a natural hitter.
He's a natural hitter.
He's a natural hitter. You know, forget about his glove and where you're going to play him in that set long term. And he's been all right, but he's a natural hitter. a natural. He just is. This lineup can hit. Now, you know, I don't know why they went through that weird funk. And maybe, you know, and maybe I just look at it and go, you got really winnable game series coming up.
Yeah.
You start to feel good about yourself. And maybe it was, to your point, maybe it was completely on Girardi.
He said, he told on himself, and I appreciate him for doing it. Remember, he was on, he did MLB Network Radio because he does a weekly hit with them. He was on the morning he got fired. He got fired. He still did his hit. I commend him for doing that. And he had the line, I thought we could have gone 7-3 the last 10 games.
Yeah.
But we went 3-7, and I guess that's on me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's the way, you know, it's the way he handled the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
The way, you know, he wrote out his lineup every day. Like,
and look at all these genius managers. Joe Maddon's out again.
I know.
He's out of L.A.
I know.
I'm always told by ESPN and all these baseball people that, oh, he's a genius of a manager. Yeah, he incredible run with Tampa getting to the World Series. Don't give me Chicago. Theo Epstein put together an all-star team.
Although it was weird how that team just faded. Chris Bryant.
Done.
Right, like how they all just kind of faded in a weird way.
And I thought when they...
I mean, Baez, what happened to Baez?
He's out.
In Detroit.
Yeah.
And he's not even hitting in Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, that was a strange thing. However, I don't know. They have a whole new crop of young players who are actually pretty good. The kid Morrell's pretty good.
But these super analytic guys, listen, some of them are going to do really well. And then some of them are going to be, benefit of having a ridiculously good team.
Yeah.
I still remember arguing with people, Dave Roberts is a really good manager because analytics. He manages the Dodgers. He could show up 10 minutes to the game, late to the game.
Dude, and here's the thing. Ask people in L.A., they can't stand
him. Right, exactly.
They can't stand him. You know, when you're managing an all-star team like that.
He walks into 100 wins.
You know, and listen, it's funny. The baseball manager... I was always like, it makes a difference if you're a good one, right? Because it's such a grind. There's no other sport that's as big of a grind. And that was the beauty of Charlie.
Right.
The beauty of Charlie is he didn't wear on you, right? And I guess was the issue with Girardi. Charlie never wore on you. He had wisdom to impart, right? Part of the baseball manager thing is a fatherly figure that, because the game is built on failure, right?
Right.
Like, let's face it, the whole game is built on failure. So because he was a fatherly figure and had seen so much and had as vast knowledge, you know, you're in a funk, you're slumping, there's all kinds of things in your head. He had a way to kind of clear guys' heads, you know? And then Mike C, you know, got to stride a little more, right? Like, you just, you know, little things. Hey, tweak this a little bit. How about you do this?
But he also held guys accountable. Jimmy Rollins was their catalyst, right? I know Ryan Howard, most powerful hitter. Chase Utley, probably one of the best pure swings on that team. But Jimmy Rollins was their catalyst, right? He was their leader, vocal leader, leader on the field, you name it. If he didn't run out a pop-up to first base, Charlie didn't care that Jimmy Rollins was the leadoff hitter and the stuff.
Well,
he put him on the bench if needed to send a message.
Yeah, but he also was a guy where they had the relationship with his players, right?
Right.
So he could go,
But look at Girardi. Like, Odubel makes 5 mistakes in a game. He's in the starting lineup the next day. He almost got in a fight with Gene Segura last year.
I know.
I don't think that's been talked about enough. Segura had to get held back from his manager.
Well, but we thought
it was Gene.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was both of them. Right? Like
maybe
just didn't vibe with Girardi.
Here's the problem. His vibe though is he's an intense dude. Like that was that story that with Mark Teixeira said, right? And thanks to our friends at Crossing Broad who've dug it up and they dug up the Teixeira line, and he just wears on you walking, and you know he's all baseball. You got to be more relaxed. I mean, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I think certainly that's part of it because they do feel looser.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's the truth. Like, you and I have always agreed that, look, this dude, he sucked the energy out. Now, whether he was a mook or whether he was just stone-faced, he sucked the energy out of the room. And guys, you know, weren't loose. And that's a sport where you got to be that way.
Yeah. And, you know, you bring up Teixeira. He himself said the Girardi piece, and then you could have a beer after a game with Rob Thompson.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that with Girardi. It almost seemed like it was all business, no play.
Yeah.
With Joey G. And I don't know what that is. You know, that's people have their walks of life, so that's his way of doing things. But, you know, this team has new life, right? There's to come out the gates the way they did yesterday again, you know they're feeling themselves.
I know.
They go, wow, we just beat Josh Hader. And not we, like two of our young guys beat Josh Hader. Yeah, one of them that shouldn't have.
You get a Veerling home run off Hader, back to back beat Stott. Veerling, what? Like that's incredible. And Josh Hader just throws fire. No, and listen, you feel good. Like they're probably going to win today. Listen, Milwaukee's in the throes of a losing streak. The Phillies are feeling good. You know, they should be able to beat Burns today.
I would hope so. He's so good.
He is, but really you know what today feels like? Today feels like it's, you know, tie ball game 1-1, you know, seventh inning, eighth inning, and they get three runs and the Phillies win 4-2.
That would be nice.
That's
like
kind of my vibe today.
Okay, I would like that.
You know, but whatever. It's a long season. It just feels like they're getting back to relevancy.
Yeah, I mean, they are talented. We've been saying that from the jump. We even said that when Girardi got fired and they were 22-29. We talked about the holes, but we've talked about, you know, the talent that's on this team and that the starting pitching actually hasn't held you back, right? The starting pitching's been, I'm not going to say great, because there have been bad outings, right? We've seen Ranger Suarez with bad outings, Gibby with bad outings, Nola with bad fifth innings, right? Not outings, but fifth innings. But they, for the most part, have not held you back. For the most part, it's been your lineup and then the occasional bullpen meltdown. And that goes back to the way Joe Girardi handled things.
Yeah.
Like, George Familia pitched in way too many important spots.
I never understood that. I didn't understand his love of Familia.
With the leader, if they're down one, you go, hey, we need you to do a shutdown inning for us so we can have another shot.
I never understood that, dude. I never understood the Familia piece.
No, neither did I.
Didn't get it, man. Didn't get it a little bit.
He went to him constantly because he had his guys.
I know.
He had his guys that he trusted. DD, which, listen, Gregorius has been great since he's come back. I'm not complaining about it, but, you know, look at Stott now. The guy's starting to get unleashed a little bit. Three home runs this week.
Yeah.
He hadn't had a home run all season.
Yeah.
He's got three because he's starting to get consistent playing time. Not, hey, you're in the starting lineup tonight, but you're not going to see it until next week.
I mean, and we talked about that from the beginning as to why the kid had to play. We talked about it. You got to play the kid.
He made the team because he played his way onto making the team. Yeah. He played so well in spring training.
Yep. All right, so lots of Phillies today. See where we feel today. I got to do an ode to Harper. Can I do the ode to Harper?
Of course, man.
I mean,
he deserves it.
You know, I mean,
like an MVP again.
I mean, seriously, don't we got to give ode? I used to do the ode to Embiid once a month. I got to do the ode to Harper. He's amazing. He really is. You watch, he's just ridiculous. Also, dude, I got to tell you, I got a bad case. A bad case, dude. I got a bad case of the Celtics.
Yep.
I do. I told you they were going to. I knew they were going to win, at least last night. And I told you I thought they'd win the series. We'll see. They're told, you know, it's 2-1. But I got a bad case of the C's. It's hit me in the gut, dude. I'm starting to relive process. And it's tough. I don't know what the antidote is for a case of the Celtics. Bad case of the C's.
Booze.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's your antidote.
All right, well, let's talk about it. We got lots to get to. Cuz Radio with the Judas just getting started on this Thursday, June the 9th. Hey, let me tell you about Royal Billionaire Recreation. Look. Imagine this. It's a summer night. late night. Nobody's got, you know, there's no work the next day, obviously no school, and you're engaged. It's like the family, some extended friends, cousins, whatever it is. All the kids are around, and there's like a late night shuffleboard tournament going on, or ping pong, foosball, skee ball, darts, pool, whatever it is. You know what you're doing? You're not just competing, having fun. You're making a memory. You know what else you're doing? You're bonding. Like all the family, all the kids and everybody, everybody's bonding. It's beautiful. That's what Royal Billy's really about. They're the incredible game room store. Like, you want anything for a bust out game room, they got everything. It's ridiculous. But what they really are is a purveyor of memories and bonds. It's awesome. And the Royal Billy sales and service team is best in the industry. They'll help you choose the right products for your home. They'll install them with a smile, deliver anywhere you want to go. They deliver. Visit the Royal Billiard Showroom in Hatfield, PA, or at royalbilliard.com. Royal Billiard and Recreation, the Delaware Valley's ultimate game room store since 1982.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Time for some morning thoughts.
Wake up, Philadelphia!
No! God, please, no! No!
Time now for morning thoughts.
Hey, lady! Shut up! Will you just shut your trap?
Shut up!
Please go away. Let me sleep for the love of God!
Because what were you thinking about this morning?
You got a long ways to go with Coop.
Okay.
You got 12 years for this. But dude, and Chuck could relate to this. Last night, I hear a voice. And it cracked.
No.
And I hear this, like, high-pitched that sounded like my wife. And then cracked into almost a man voice. And I was like, oh, not my little boy.
Daddy.
My Anthony's voice is changing.
Wow.
I want to cry. My little guy. My little boy.
How about that, man? That's a big day.
I know. I was like, oh,
trying to think
my
like
God.
Those days. Like, I was one of the kids that had the mustache start coming in a little bit earlier.
Yeah, he
and
has
I was
that.
Definitely like a mirror. Like, I looked in the mirror, right, checking out my mustache.
Same way, dude.
You think you're cool? Like, oh yeah, look at this.
Same way.
Selling,
I know.
It.
He's
Mr. Baseball.
He's got the sash. Yeah, he's got the stash. The whole thing, man.
That's good.
No, it's not good. I don't want. I don't want it. It's horrible.
I'll keep sending you pictures of Cooper.
Meanwhile, please do. I can't wait to come see him. Meanwhile, the little one, little Oedipus. All right. I tell you what he did.
Oedipus.
Did I tell you what he does?
What does he do?
How about this move? So he's been sick. So. He had the COVID, then bam.
Yeah, this is the non-COVID related illness.
This is the inner ear infection.
Oh, God.
He's got hit left and right.
That's I remember those days.
All right. So it's been hard. So anyway, I feel for him. So when he's sick, he's in bed with Tam. Like, that's it. Like, he's I'm watching games, and he takes my spot.
Yeah.
All right? So he comes into the room, and he goes, Daddy, I hear a noise downstairs. Sounds like a voice. So So I
got a lot of voices in your house.
Right. So I go downstairs. I got the bat. Right. I'm walking around with a bat. Check every nook and cranny, every crevice. No, nothing. Right. No noise. No, I hear somebody's down there. Right. I go. I'm walking around. I come upstairs. He's in my spot.
Wow.
All snuggled up.
Dude.
Yeah.
Strong move by Moss.
Yeah.
I played you like a fiddle, man.
He did. I sucker. Sucker.
Where'd he learn that one from?
How about that move?
That's a good move, man.
I know.
Where'd he learn that from?
I know. How about that? That's all ingenuity.
I give him a lot of credit.
Yeah.
That's not even a get mad piece. That's Anchorman. I'm not even mad. I'm impressed.
I know. That's little Oedipus.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Good for Moss.
No, I'm not good for Moss.
Anyways, I was stumping your brain this morning.
Yes,
that's
you
my
were.
Thought. And no, before anyone thinks, oh, did you take a hit before you came to work today? No, you know, I was coming to work and I was curious. And I wonder if there's other things in the world that you are curious about how does this work? How does this happen? And I finally sent you the photo because you couldn't understand what I was trying to explain. It is called, Anthony, Transfer Machine.
Okay.
Which is the big truck on Walt Whitman Bridge, Ben Franklin Bridge, that moves the median so that you can have more lanes heading into the city during rush hour in the morning. And then it changes the lanes. There's more lanes heading back to the Jersey side post-work day. But my question is, because I had to look it up. I thought, because you were telling me it's all automatic, and I thought I was taking crazy pills.
I didn't know what you were talking
about. It's a two-man operation.
Right.
So two people are in the big truck that changes the median on the bridge.
You know who does that?
Who?
The Ace Man.
Really?
You want him to call up, explain to you?
Yes, because this was my biggest question. Not how it works. Like, I get it. But where did they go? Because when they transfer the lane and the truck ends up on the Jersey side of the bridge, there's no, like, the tolls aren't there, right? So there's no escape route. But the truck sits there until it's time to change lanes again. So do they just sit there all day?
I don't know. The Ace Man will know.
Like, I'm very...
That's his jurisdiction.
Dude, I'm driving over the bridge this morning.
No, I didn't know what you were talking about. I thought you were talking about the tolls. And the lanes that are open.
The lights and all that.
And
no,
the lights.
No.
I'm going, what's talking about?
That's why I kept on saying the truck.
Yeah.
So I don't, like, when they go to the Jersey side, there's no exit. Do they just sit there in the truck? Or do they wait until traffic dies down and they sprint across the bridge?
I'm very curious. I have no idea.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm trying
I have
to
no
think,
idea.
It made me think, what other things am I like, how does that work? And nothing's coming to mind yet because I was watching it happen. But I wonder, is there any other things in life where you go, how does that thing work? I'm so, like, I'm fascinated. I need to know. And no, none of these websites tell me how. They just tell me it's a two-man job.
Okay. All right. Well, I just sent a note to the Ace Man.
Okay.
All right. Now, the Ace Man will call up.
I will lose sleep over this.
And he will, No, listen, I know exactly that feeling. I know that, believe me, there are things that I know the same thing. Like, I'll have a question about something, and until I get the answer, it will gnaw at me.
Oh, yeah, dude, it's been bothering me all morning.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to save it for morning thoughts, so I had to wait an hour and 10 minutes once the show started just to bring it up.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of the show. One of the beauties of the show is that we have our own, like, Wicca audience.
Yes.
Like, anything.
Somebody's going to know.
Anything that you have a question, it's what I love, right? You have a question about anything in life, just ask the audience. There's somebody that's going to know the answer.
Exactly. Now I need to bring something up because I learned something else new today. Now I also didn't look at his bio, but I mentioned Big Kev, who's going through the Harry Potter books for the first time. I remember he said, don't spoil anything. I said,
yes.
Yo, dude, it was 97 when the first book came out.
Right.
He responds, Aunt, they don't let Amish and Mennonites read Harry Potter book. He is from the Amish Mennonite PA Dutch heritage.
Really?
So he's just now, I don't know, I don't know the story. I don't know if he left. I don't know if
he
reached a certain age.
Yeah,
I don't know. But he is reading it for the first time because he was not allowed to.
Wow.
When he was younger.
Wow.
And so my apologies for not knowing that, but it's good to learn things like that.
Yes.
How about it?
Yeah, that's interesting. Very interesting. I didn't realize that there are certain genres that are no good. Hey, did your power go out last night?
No. The storms were wild, though.
Yeah, mine did. Wakes you up, you go, wait a second, something's off.
Yeah.
No power.
Interesting.
But thankfully, it came back on in a couple hours. But it was, you know how I'm like, waking up, I'm like, I don't feel the air conditioning.
Right.
Something up.
It's too calm. Eerie. That's an eerie feeling.
It is eerie. Because you wake up, you're out of the sleep, and you're going, what's up? Right? There's something's going on here.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
And it doesn't get more Philadelphia than Jeremiah Zagar, who directed the movie Hustle. Jeremiah, congratulations, Jer.
Thank you, Anthony. I really appreciate you. By the way, who is amazing in the movie, Anthony Gargano, is excellent, excellent in this film. So I hope you get to see the movie just for you, Anthony,
I got to tell you, I want to start at the beginning, though. I want to start you, a kid growing up right off of South Street, a kid working at TLA Video. I love it because, you know, we grew up, like, we lived around the corner from each other, right, forever. And TLA Video, I loved. It was just the best, you know, for any film geek, it was the greatest. And, you know, I can see it. It's you. You were born to do this, Jeremiah. When did you realize that, you know what, I got to tell stories. I got to be a director and make movies.
I thought I could just work at TLA. I mean, that was the goal. The goal was, you know, to be a video store clerk, to be honest, you know, when I was really young. I just wanted to watch movies all the time. And then, you know, video stores, they've had a hard time. If I had gone that way, you know, I wouldn't have a job today, which is unfortunate. So, you know, directing seemed like the next obvious choice. And that's what happened, man. That's what I went to school for it, and I did my best trying to make my own films with, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up with this guy named Jeremy Yakis. We went to, Akiba Hebrew Academy on the main line together. This is my high school, you know, experience. And Jeremy and I loved movies. We used to go to movies all the time together and at the Ritz, you know, and he went to school at BU. I went to school at Emerson. We started making films together there and we've had a company since then. And we've been making movies together, you know, since we were little kids.
I love that story, man. I do. I love it. You did a film. It's We the Animals, which I thought was such a beautiful story. It was just, it was hard, you know, it was volatile, it was like hardcore, beautiful, the children. I mean, I loved your vision, like, you know, and this one, you know, it's different. It's Netflix, it's big, it's a completely different story, and you're doing it in your hometown. What was, you know, what came first with this thing? Like, when you got this project, what made you leap at it?
Well, you know, I've been sent some scripts, some Hollywood scripts after We the Animals, that didn't speak to me. And, you know, then I got this script, and the script was beautifully written. You know, Will Fetters and Taylor, they had written a really love, like, you know, it was, the dialogue was so strong, I remember. But it wasn't as esoteric, you know, as the work I usually do, or subversive, whatever you want to call it, you know. And
subversive.
I didn't know.
I love that.
I didn't know it was for me, you know, but I did love Adam Sandler's film. And I just thought he was such an incredible actor. And I was, and it was set in Philadelphia. And I thought, man, you know, maybe there's something here for me. You know, I at first I didn't jump at it. At first I said, you know, there's probably not, you know, and then, you know, the script just kept brewing in my mind. I couldn't let go of it. And so I called Adam back and I said, maybe there's something here. And we started talking, and the conversations were really lovely. And it felt like, oh man, maybe I could, you know, put my mark on this thing and do it in a way that, you know, made me feel comfortable. And you know, we were able to do that. I feel really lucky about that.
It came out, and the thing that I thought, it was authentic. Like, it felt real. And we're talking to the director of the film, Jeremiah Zagar, and I'm just so proud of the fact that it felt authentic and real. And what did you think the key to that was, and how important was the authenticity to the story? Because you know how it is. You know, you make a sports film, and if it doesn't resonate, it can be really ugly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that starts with Adam and him wanting to hire a person like me, you know, who makes films that feel real. You know, that's the ethos. I like to say that, you know, my films, you know, feel real, but also dreamlike, you know, that they're in these two worlds kind of bouncing back and forth. You know, and we concentrate on trying to, you know, to make sure that, you know, everything from the camera work to the acting, to, you know, the formatting is, to the color is something to the locations is something that is true and authentic. You know, that if we're going to shoot in a studio, that the sets look just like the inside of a house, you know, that they better have the same dimensions and the same vibe. And that's, you know, that's the goal, the same kind of lighting, and that we don't light it like it is a big splashy Hollywood movie. We light it like, you know, like it should feel real. And you know, that all that comes from a desire of ours for authenticity, but also a desire that the producers and Netflix, you know, have to let us do our thing. And you know, so it's a concerted team effort.
What were you, were you a sport? Now, you know, you listen, growing up right on South Street, your father, people would know your house and know your dad because he's a man of the mosaics, right? Which is so beautiful. Like, I, you know, your father's an artist, and, you know, everybody who lives in that neighborhood knows your dad, knows the house, right? Did you grow up a sports fan?
Yeah, I loved sports growing up. I mean, my father was not a sports fan, and my mother is not a sports fan. But you know, I grew up in Philadelphia, so I guess I just got the gene. I got the Philly gene. I think it was impossible not to be an Eagles fan, a Sixers fan when I was a kid. You know, the only thing I never got attached to is hockey. I love basketball and I love football, and. You know, I would go to the games when I could, and I always watched. I remember when I was a little kid watching the Phillies at the World Series and crying when we lost. And I was just like this little kid crying.
93, baby. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, bro.
It was painful. It was painful. It was painful. And so when we won, you know, that was a big moment for me.
We're talking to Jeremiah Zagar, who did such a beautiful job, the director of the movie Hustle. It has dropped on Netflix, and please watch this. It's a love letter to Philadelphia. And that, I know that that was a big part of it. You know, you being a child of the city, you knew where to go. You saw your vision. You wanted Philadelphia to pop on the screen, and it felt like a love letter to the city.
Yeah, I mean, I love the city I grew up in. And there were places that I would walk around and walk to, you know, growing up. And so we set, you know, we set the family in South Philadelphia. We set their home in South Philadelphia because I know it and I feel comfortable there, you know. I grew up right around the corner from you, you know. So I feel a tremendous comfort on 4th at Bainbridge and, you know, in the Italian market. And, you know, the Rocky Italian market is not the Italian market I grew up in. The Italian market I grew up in is the one where you buy your vegetables.
And you
go to Fonte's and you get your coffee maker and your pot, you know. That's my hometown. And I love those stores.
You know, my grandmother used to date Don Fonte, who used to own it back in the day.
That's crazy.
Right? That's what, you know, they were older. They got together, right? But that's Philadelphia, right? And particularly those neighborhoods, right? But that's Philadelphia. The link, like your father, it's funny. I got a buddy of mine, Marco Dundovich, right? And Marco knows your father. He worked on your house, right? Like he did. He was a contractor who did work on your house. And that's the beauty of Philadelphia. And you know what's amazing? Is that Adam nailed it. Like, Adam nailed the whole thing, man.
He feels so Philly, right? I know, it's incredible. He feels so Philly. Him and Queen Latifah feel like such a Philly couple to me.
Right?
You know, I love that vibe, yeah. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, he really fell in love with the city, I think, and he wanted to do it justice. You know, his like main dude, this guy John Lochran, is a Philly guy, and like, you know, I think he's grown up, you know, loving the city for years.
Yeah, I love. You know, it's funny because they were talking about, John was talking about, you know, being like an Eagle nut, right? Like freaking out, and it was so, he loves Eagles so much that Adam always feels like, you know, I got to root for him. Just because of Jonathan, right? Like, just because of John, I got to root for the Eagles.
He, like, loves them. Like, he, like, knows the players. They're all his friends. They would come to set and stuff. Yeah, they're, like, he's an Eagles fanatic. He's a tailgater.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. But I do want to get into Adam a little bit in the relationship, because you as a director, and I want you to tell people about, you know, what it's like. You know, being a director is being a coach and being a GM at the same time. And, you know, you're dealing with a mega superstar in Adam Sandler.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think when you have Michael Jordan, you don't need to say too much to him. You know, he goes out there and he wins the game, or, you know, like, you know, that's what it's like with Adam. You know, he's going to be perfect. We had a lot of, other actors in this movie that had never acted before, you know.
Wancho was amazing, by the way.
Right?
Ah!
And, you know, that's Noel Gentile. That's the acting coach, you know, making sure that those people are playing on the same level as Adam. And you know, part of the thing that I do as a director, to be honest, is I just surround myself with people who, you know, are amazing at their job, so I can stand back and watch them do amazing things. You know, Zach, my DP, is like that, and Seth, my colorist, and Jeremy, and, you know, and all the producers of this film, Barry and Joe. You know, he's like the editors. You know, Keiko, Tom, Brian. You know, you're surrounding yourself with people who are amazing, so that, you know, you look good.
Yeah, but it all goes back to you, because it's still going to be your vision with the script, and you're going to take it and adapt it and, you know, make, and you have an idea of how it's going to feel and what you want people to feel as they watch this. And, you know, and again, I can't believe how great an actor. Listen, in Uncut Gems, Adam was tremendous. You know, someone who's that gifted comedically and then is so gifted in a serious role, I mean, he really is a true talent.
Yeah. Absolutely. One of the best out there, for sure.
And it was easy. Like, I mean, what felt good about you guys, like, you know, he welcomed the city. Every time I was there, people were coming up to him, and he was just a gentleman, right? Like, I thought that all those people, but Adam was just a gentleman and gave time to people, and he was just very down to earth.
yeah, he loves people, and he loves, you know, making sure that if they come out to see him, that he, you know, shakes hands and signs autographs. It's very cool. It's a very cool thing to do.
How about the Sixers? What did you, that relationship I thought was really cool, because I know you spent a lot of time going back and forth to Sixers and their facility.
Organization. Everybody there that we met, you know, is just, you know, royalty, and the players are like the nicest people. Tobias is the nicest dude. Yeah. Matisse is like, he's a filmmaker himself, and
yes,
such a cool guy. Maxi, man, what a prince. Like, these are people that, you know, are in the film, and you would think, you know, they have these huge contracts, and they're like, you know, what do they need us for? But they were so cordial and sweet and generous. You know, Doc Rivers, all the coaching staff. It was like, you know, they welcomed us with such open arms. It was very moving for a young Philadelphia fan.
That's awesome.
Like myself.
That's so cool. What'd you do to celebrate after Monday night with the family? I mean, what was the family's got to be over the moon.
You know, I just went back to my house with my mom and dad, and we had some tequila, and we laughed, and we enjoyed each other. You know, they're older, you know, now that my parents are in their 80s. And so I just feel lucky every day I get to spend and every night I get to spend with them, you know. And it was a special night.
I got to tell you, brother, so proud of you. Really, you just killed it. You did a great job. Everybody has to see it on Netflix. Hustle. It was just well done, man. As a Philadelphian to another Philadelphian, we're proud, so proud of you, buddy.
Oh, thank you, Anthony. You're an amazing guy, man, and a wonderful actor, you know, and a beautiful writer. So thank you for everything.
Love you, buddy. Much success. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Here he is, the great Jeremiah Zagar.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.